The Great Chapter, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. The Shady Orchid Tree. Mendicants, when the leaves on the shady orchid tree belonging to the gods of the 33 turn brown, the gods are elated. They think, now the leaves on the shady orchid tree have turned brown, it won't be long until they fall. When the leaves have fallen, the gods are elated. They think, now the leaves on the shady orchid tree have fallen, it won't be long until its foliage starts to regrow. When the foliage starts to regrow, the gods are elated. They think, now the foliage of the shady orchid tree has started to regrow, it won't be long until it's ready to grow flowers and leaves separately. When it's ready to grow flowers and leaves separately, the gods are elated. They think, now the shady orchid tree is ready to grow flowers and leaves separately. It won't be long until buds start to form. When the buds start to form, the gods are elated. They think, now the buds of the shady orchid tree have started to form. It won't be long until the buds burst. When the buds have burst, the gods are elated. They think, now the buds of the shady orchid tree have burst, it won't be long until it fully blossoms. When the shady orchid tree of the gods of the 33 has fully blossomed, the gods are elated. For 4 heavenly months they amused themselves at the root of the tree, supplied and provided with the 5 kinds of sensual stimulation. When the shady orchid tree has fully blossomed, its radiance spreads for 50 leagues, while its fragrance wafts for 100 leagues. Such is the majesty of the shady orchid tree. In the same way, when a noble disciple plans to go forth from the lay life to homelessness, they're like the shady orchid tree when its leaves turn brown. When a noble disciple shaves off their hair and beard, dresses in ochre robes, and goes forth from the lay life to homelessness, they're like the shady orchid tree when its leaves fall. When a noble disciple, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion while placing the mind and keeping it connected, they're like the shady orchid tree when its foliage starts to regrow. When, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, a noble disciple enters and remains in the second absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of immersion, with internal clarity and mind at one, without placing the mind and keeping it connected. They're like the shady orchid tree when it's ready to grow flowers and leaves separately. When, with the fading away of rapture, a noble disciple enters and remains in the third absorption, where they meditate with equanimity, mindful and aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare, equanimous and mindful, one meditates in bliss. They're like the shady orchid tree when its buds start to form. When, giving up pleasure and pain, and ending former happiness and sadness, a noble disciple enters and remains in the fourth absorption, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness, they're like the shady orchid tree when its buds burst. When a noble disciple realizes the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements, they're like the shady orchid tree when it fully blossoms. At that time the earth gods raise the cry, this venerable named so-and-so, from such-and-such a village or town, the pupil of the venerable named so-and-so, went forth from the lay life to homelessness. They've realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. Hearing the cry of the earth gods, the gods of the 4 great kings, the gods of the 33, the gods of Yama, the joyful gods, the gods who love to create, the gods who control the creations of others, the gods of Brahma's host raise the cry, this venerable named so-and-so, from such-and-such a village or town, the pupil of the venerable named so-and-so, went forth from the lay life to homelessness. They've realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. And so, at that moment, in that instant, the cry soars up to the Brahma realm. Such is the majesty of a mendicant who has ended defilements. Honour. Then, as Venerable Sariputta was in private retreat, this thought came to his mind. What should a mendicant honour and respect and rely on, to give up the unskilful and develop the skilful? Then he thought, a mendicant should honour and respect and rely on the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, diligence. A mendicant should honour and respect and rely on hospitality to give up the unskilful and develop the skilful. Then he thought, these qualities are pure and bright in me. Why don't I go and tell them to the Buddha? Then these qualities will not only be purified in me, but will be better known as purified. Suppose a man were to acquire a gold coin, pure and bright. They'd think, my gold coin is pure and bright. Why don't I take it to show the smiths? Then it will not only be purified, but will be better known as purified. In the same way, these qualities are pure and bright in me. Why don't I go and tell them to the Buddha? Then these qualities will not only be purified in me, but will be better known as purified. Then, in the late afternoon, Sariputta came out of retreat and went to the Buddha. He bowed, sat down to one side, and told the Buddha of his thoughts while on retreat. Good, good, Sariputta. A mendicant should honour and respect and rely on the teacher, to give up the unskilful and develop the skilful. A mendicant should honour and respect and rely on the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, diligence. A mendicant should honour and respect and rely on hospitality to give up the unskilful and develop the skilful. When he said this, Venerable Sariputta said to the Buddha, Sir, this is how I understand the detailed meaning of the Buddha's brief statement. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher to respect the teaching. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher disrespects the teaching. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher and the teaching to respect the sangha. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher and the teaching disrespects the sangha. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher, the teaching, and the sangha to respect the training. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher, the teaching, and the sangha disrespects the training. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, and the training to respect immersion. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, and the training disrespects immersion. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, and immersion to respect diligence. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, and immersion disrespects diligence. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence to respect hospitality. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence disrespects hospitality. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who does respect the teacher to disrespect the teaching. A mendicant who respects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence respects hospitality. It's quite possible for a mendicant who respects the teacher to respect the teaching. A mendicant who respects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence respects hospitality. That's how I understand the detailed meaning of the Buddha's brief statement. Good, good, Sariputta. It's good that you understand the detailed meaning of what I've said in brief like this. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who doesn't respect the teacher to respect the teaching. A mendicant who disrespects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence disrespects hospitality. It's quite impossible for a mendicant who does respect the teacher to disrespect the teaching. A mendicant who respects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence respects hospitality. It's quite possible for a mendicant who does respect the teacher to respect the teaching. A mendicant who respects the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, immersion, and diligence respects hospitality. This is how to understand the detailed meaning of what I said in brief. Committed to development. Mendicants, when a mendicant is not committed to development, they might wish, if only my mind were freed from the defilements by not grasping. Even so, their mind is not freed from defilements by not grasping. Why is that? You should say, it's because they're undeveloped. Undeveloped in what? The four kinds of mindfulness meditation, the four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven awakening factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Suppose there was a chicken with 8 or 10 or 12 eggs, but she had not properly sat on them to keep them warm and incubated. Even if that chicken might wish, if only my chicks could break out of the eggshell with their claws and beak and hatch safely. Still, they can't break out and hatch safely. Why is that? Because she has not properly sat on them to keep them warm and incubated. In the same way, when a mendicant is not committed to development, they might wish, if only my mind was freed from the defilements by not grasping. Even so, their mind is not freed from defilements by not grasping. Why is that? You should say, it's because they're undeveloped. Undeveloped in what? The four kinds of mindfulness meditation, the four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven awakening factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. When a mendicant is committed to development, they might not wish, if only my mind was freed from the defilements by not grasping. Even so, their mind is freed from defilements by not grasping. Why is that? You should say, it's because they are developed. Developed in what? The four kinds of mindfulness meditation, the four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven awakening factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Suppose there was a chicken with 8 or 10 or 12 eggs, and she properly sat on them to keep them warm and incubated. Even if that chicken doesn't wish, if only my chicks could break out of the eggshell with their claws and beak and hatch safely. Still, they can break out and hatch safely. Why is that? Because she properly sat on them to keep them warm and incubated. In the same way, when a mendicant is committed to development, they might not wish, if only my mind was freed from the defilements by not grasping. Even so, their mind is freed from defilements by not grasping. Why is that? You should say, it's because they are developed. Developed in what? The four kinds of mindfulness meditation, the four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven awakening factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Suppose a carpenter or their apprentice sees the marks of his fingers and thumb on the handle of his adze. They don't know how much of the handle was worn away today, how much yesterday, and how much previously. They just know what has been worn away. In the same way, when a mendicant is committed to development, they don't know how much of the defilements were worn away today, how much yesterday, and how much previously. They just know what has been worn away. Suppose there was a seafaring ship bound together with ropes. For 6 months they deteriorated in the water. Then in the cold season it was hauled up on dry land, where the ropes were weathered by wind and sun. When the clouds soaked it with rain, the ropes would readily collapse and rot away. In the same way, when a mendicant is committed to development, their fetters readily collapse and rot away. A simile of the bonfire. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was wandering in the land of the Kosalans, together with a large sangha of mendicants. While walking along the road, at a certain spot he saw a bonfire burning, blazing and glowing. Seeing this, he left the road, sat at the root of a tree on a seat spread out, and addressed the mendicants. "Mendicants, do you see that bonfire burning, blazing and glowing?"
"Yes, sir."
"What do you think, mendicants? Which is better, to sit or lie down embracing that bonfire, or to sit or lie down embracing a girl of the aristocrats or Brahmins or householders with soft and tender hands and feet?"
"Sir, it would be much better to sit or lie down embracing a girl of the aristocrats or Brahmins or householders with soft and tender hands and feet, for it would be painful to sit or lie down embracing that bonfire."
"I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man, of bad qualities, filthy, with suspicious behaviour, underhand, no true ascetic or spiritual practitioner, though claiming to be one, rotten inside, corrupt and depraved, to sit or lie down embracing that bonfire."
"Why is that?"
"Because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man sits or lies down embracing a girl of the aristocrats or Brahmins or householders with soft and tender hands and feet, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he is reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better, to have a strong man twist a tough horsehair rope around both shins and tighten it so that it cuts through your outer skin, your inner skin, your flesh, sinews and bones, until it reaches your marrow and keeps pushing? Or to consent to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders bowing down to you?"
"Sir, it would be much better to consent to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders bowing down, for it would be painful to have a strong man twist a tough horsehair rope around your shins and tighten it so that it cut through the outer skin until it reached the marrow and kept pushing."
"I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man twist a tough horsehair rope around both shins and tighten it until it reached the marrow and kept pushing."
"Why is that?"
"Because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man consents to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders bowing down, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better, to have a strong man stab you in the chest with a sharp oiled sword, or to consent to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders revering you with joined palms?"
"Sir, it would be much better to consent to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders revering you with joined palms, for it would be painful to have a strong man stab you in the chest with a sharp oiled sword."
"I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man stab him in the chest with a sharp oiled sword."
"Why is that?" because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man consents to well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders revering him with joined palms, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better? To have a strong man wrap you up in a red-hot sheet of iron, burning, blazing, and glowing? Or to enjoy the use of a robe given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders? Sir, it would be much better to enjoy the use of a robe given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, for it would be painful to have a strong man wrap you up in a red-hot sheet of iron, burning, blazing, and glowing. I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man wrap him up in a red-hot sheet of iron, burning, blazing, and glowing. Why is that? Because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man enjoys the use of a robe given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats, or Brahmins, or householders, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better? To have a strong man force your mouth open with a hot iron spike and shove in a red-hot copper ball, burning, blazing, and glowing, that burns your lips, mouth, tongue, throat, and stomach before coming out below, dragging your entrails? Or to enjoy alms food given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders? Sir, it would be much better to enjoy alms food given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, for it would be painful to have a strong man force your mouth open with a hot iron spike and shove a red-hot copper ball, burning, blazing, and glowing, that burns your lips, mouth, tongue, throat, and stomach before coming out below, dragging your entrails. I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man force his mouth open with a hot iron spike and shove in a red-hot copper ball, burning, blazing, and glowing, that burns his lips, mouth, tongue, throat, and stomach before coming out below with his entrails. Why is that? Because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man enjoys alms food given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better? To have a strong man grab you by the head or shoulders and make you sit or lie down on a red-hot iron bed or seat? Or to enjoy the use of beds and chairs given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders? Sir, it would be much better to enjoy the use of beds and chairs given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders. For it would be painful to have a strong man grab you by the head or shoulders and make you sit or lie down on a red-hot iron bed or seat. I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man grab him by the head or shoulders and make him sit or lie down on a red-hot iron bed or seat. Why is that? Because that might result in death or deadly pain. But when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man enjoys the use of beds and seats given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. What do you think, mendicants? Which is better, to have a strong man grab you, turn you upside down, and shove you in a red-hot copper pot, burning, blazing and glowing, where you're seared in boiling scum and swept up and down and round, or to enjoy the use of dwellings given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders?
Sir, it would be much better to enjoy the use of dwellings given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, for it would be painful to have a strong man grab you, turn you upside down and shove you in a red-hot copper pot, burning, blazing and glowing, where you're seared in boiling scum and swept up and down and round. I declare this to you, mendicants. I announce this to you. It would be better for that unethical man to have a strong man grab him, turn him upside down and shove him in a red-hot copper pot, burning, blazing and glowing, where he's seared in boiling scum and swept up and down and round. Why is that? Because that might result in death or deadly pain, but when his body breaks up after death, it would not cause him to be reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. But when such an unethical man enjoys the use of dwellings given in faith by well-to-do aristocrats or Brahmins or householders, that brings him lasting harm and suffering. When his body breaks up after death, he's reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. So you should train like this. Our use of robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines and supplies for the sick shall be of great fruit and benefit for those who offered them. And our going forth will not be wasted, but will be fruitful and fertile. That's how you should train. Considering what is good for yourself, mendicants, is quite enough for you to persist with diligence. Considering what is good for others is quite enough for you to persist with diligence. Considering what is good for both is quite enough for you to persist with diligence. That is what the Buddha said. And while this discourse was being spoken, 60 monks spewed hot blood from their mouths. 60 mendicants resigned the training and returned to a lesser life, saying, "It's too hard, Blessed One. It's just too hard." And 60 monks were freed from defilements by not grasping.
About Sunetta. Once upon a time, mendicants, there was a teacher called Sunetta. He was a religious founder and was free of sensual desire. He had many hundreds of disciples. He taught them the path to rebirth in the company of Brahma. Those lacking confidence in Sunetta were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Those full of confidence in Sunetta were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. Once upon a time, there was a teacher called Mugupakka, Aranemi, Kudalaka, Hatipala, Jutipala, Araka. He was a religious founder and was free of sensual desire. He had many hundreds of disciples. He taught them the way to rebirth in the company of Brahma. Those lacking confidence in Araka were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Those full of confidence in Araka were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. What do you think, mendicants? If someone with malicious intent were to abuse and insult these 7 teachers with their hundreds of followers, would they not create much wickedness?
Yes, sir.
They would indeed. But someone who abuses and insults a single person accomplished in view with malicious intent creates even more wickedness. Why is that? I say that any injury done by those outside of the Buddhist community does not compare with what is done to one's own spiritual companions. So you should train like this. We will have no malicious intent for our spiritual companions. That's how you should train. About Arika. Once upon a time, mendicants, there was a teacher called Arika. He was a religious founder and was free of sensual desire. He had many hundreds of disciples, and he taught them like this. Brahmins, life as a human is short, brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like a drop of dew on a grass tip. When the sun comes up, it quickly evaporates and doesn't last long. In the same way, life as a human is like a dewdrop. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like when the rain falls heavily. The bubbles quickly vanish and don't last long. In the same way, life as a human is like a bubble. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like a line drawn in water. It vanishes quickly and doesn't last long. In the same way, life as a human is like a line drawn in water. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like a mountain river travelling far, flowing fast, carrying all before it. It doesn't turn back, not for a moment, a second, an instant, but runs, rolls and flows on. In the same way, life as a human is like a mountain river. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like a strong man who has formed a glob of spit on the tip of his tongue. He could easily spit it out. In the same way, life as a human is like a glob of spit. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. Suppose there was an iron cauldron that had been heated all day. If you tossed a scrap of meat in, it would quickly vanish and not last long. In the same way, life as a human is like a scrap of meat. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. It's like a cow being led to the slaughterhouse. With every step she comes closer to the slaughter, closer to death. In the same way, life as a human is like a cow being slaughtered. It's brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. Now, mendicants, at that time human beings had a lifespan of 60,000 years. Girls could be married at 500 years of age, and human beings only had 6 afflictions: cold, heat, hunger, thirst, and the need to defecate and urinate. But even though humans were so long-lived, with so few afflictions, Arika still taught in this way. Life as a human is short, brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. These days it'd be right to say, life as a human is short, brief and fleeting, full of suffering and distress. Be thoughtful and wake up. Do what's good and lead the spiritual life, for no one born can escape death. For these days a long life is 100 years, or a little more. Living for 100 years, there are just 300 seasons, 100 each of the winter, summer and rains, living for 300 seasons, there are just 1,200 months, 400 in each of the winter, summer, and rains. Living for 1,200 months, there are just 2,400 fortnights, 800 in each of the winter, summer, and rains. Living for 2,400 fortnights, there are just 36,000 days, 12,000 in each of the summer, winter, and rains. Living for 36,000 days, you just eat 72,000 meals, 24,000 in each of the summer, winter, and rains, including when you're suckling at the breast and when you're prevented from eating. Things that prevent you from eating include anger, pain, sickness, Sabbath, or being unable to get food. So, mendicants, for a human being with 100 years' lifespan, I have counted the lifespan, the limit of the lifespan, the seasons, the years, the months, the fortnights, the nights, the days, the meals, and the things that prevent them from eating. Out of compassion, I've done what a teacher should do who wants what's best for their disciples. Here are these roots of trees, and here are these empty huts. Practice absorption, mendicants. Don't be negligent. Don't regret it later. This is my instruction to you.